back. So my rest is while I'm going the other leg. And I like slow eccentric. Boom, right? So like basically, one is a power move.
Power, power.
Saturday morning, you need to be tuning in. Wake up, get crushed out your eyes. We about to go live, so come get the schooling in. About our oppression, we answer the questions like, how do we get out this lower status? We let the scripts prophesy. We bringing the Bible to life so that you relate. The world thinks we're rejects, but that word we reject. Watch and we'll show you precept upon precept. Line upon line, the scripts say we're the greatest, and they can't debate it. Salvation is only for the blacks, Hispanics, and natives.
Power, power, it's the what? Power, power, it's the who? Power, power, yeah, yeah. Blacks, Hispanics, and natives. Power, power, it's the what? Power, power, it's the who? Power, power, yeah, yeah. Blacks, Hispanics, and natives. Power, power, it's the what? Power, power, it's the who? Power, power, yeah, yeah. Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah. Black, Hispanic,
that program is like 90 minutes for me, like doing the full workload. Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour, Native Latin and Black Biblical Topics. I am Captain Yahshua.
Shalom, happy Sabbath, Israel. Captain Amariah.
I'm Soldier Zerishina.
Soldiers of, you've been on the show before, right, Soldier?
No, sir, this is my first time.
No, really? Not even at the old spot?
No, sir.
Wow, welcome. Look, he looks all bashful and stuff. Hey, hey, Soldiers of Ishadai is a single brother that is, that is ready, of good report, you know? So any sisters out there interested in the brother, I'm here trying to set him up. look, he got a little dimple with a lavender from the mighty tribe of Benjamin, my second favorite tribe.
There it is.
My second favorite tribe. I grew up with a lot of Benjamites. Benjamin and Levi, I grew up with a lot of. Judah too. But I was real tight with Benji and Levi growing up. More Benji. I was tight with Benji a lot. Yeah, man. So yeah, sisters, you know, you could send us a DM if you're have some interest in the brother. Send a nice picture of yourself, as well as what you're looking for in a man. And I always tell sisters, quote your favorite scripture, right? I don't see if you study. See if you pull like a real John 3:16.
Yeah, right. Genesis 1:1. It just never gets old when we go right back to the beginning.
Right. So, yeah, good brother. Sisters that are interested, by all means, you can respond.
Is that today's topic?
That is today's topic we are going to speak about.
And with that, we say shalom.
Yeah, we're over here talking about weightlifting. I don't know if they heard us.
Oh, I know, right? I need
to I know. Mm. Hey, your arms are looking a little fuller.
Hey, you know, I'm trying to be like you,
Sarah. Nah, I struggle with my biceps. So, yeah, I don't make the mind-muscle connection.
I'm trying to stay consistent, man. Yeah. Honoring our temples is, I was thinking about it, and I said, man, listen, I'm keeping all these commandments to the best of my ability. But I willingly eat bad things. I willingly don't work out. I willingly do all these things. That's willful sin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to die when Christ returns if I don't turn it up a notch and start taking care of my temple. So.
Yeah, man. You're right about that. It's a good way to look at it. I got to remember that when the cookies is calling me. Or the pizza.
Moderation.
Yeah, I know, man. But, like, if I haven't had pizza in a minute, like, you know, I can't do just 2 slices. Especially if it's good. I put it down.
I put it down.
All right.
I guess we all have some temptations.
Yeah. Mine is sweets, man. Like, I don't eat a lot of fatty foods. Like, actually, most of my meals are actually pretty balanced or whatever. Like, I don't eat crap. Yeah, but it's the dainty. You know, and that'll do it to you. Like, you know,
absolutely.
Like, because you think, like, a little bit here, a little bit there, and then before you know it, that stuff, they're, like, very calorically dense.
Big time.
So, like, a little piece of cookie would be like 300 calories. Like, damn, then you're eating like 4 of those.
Mm-hmm.
You just blew it, you know? So.
And then, you know, the control sometimes where you start, you said, hey, I'm going for 1 or 2, but then you end up having 5 or 6.
Yeah, man. I know.
Filling the whole row of Oreos.
Don't go food shopping hungry either.
Nope.
I went to Wingo yesterday. I was supposed to get some stuff for the lunch for my wife to make. And then I wound up buying like four things of sweets, you know. I was like looking at it. I was like, oh, wow, look at this.
You know what? I didn't used to be real big into sweets, but lately, like, that's been like my thing too.
Sweets sweets is my thing, like, big time. So, anyway, so we are back. I pray that some of y'all were able to catch the weekday show. If not, it is on the Facebook feed. It's also on Periscope, as well as our YouTube page as well. We'll be featured Wednesday nights from 7 to 9 Arizona time and 9, 11 Eastern. All right. But the Arizona time is what you should watch for. Match it up with your time zone, as we do not change the clocks here.
That's right.
And when daylight savings times comes, it'll be a 10 to 12 Eastern slot. But we are 7 to 9 Arizona time Wednesday nights. We kicked off the show talking about the truth about the first Thanksgiving. We were supposed to segue into a little bit about Indian slavery. And so we're going to touch on that a little bit today for today's show, for our hour slot here. And then carry over on Wednesday and continue to uncover the depths of the Indian slave trade, which, interestingly enough, the article we're going to review for today's show, and if we have time, we'll go through some of the books, actually speaks in its opening, which is why I selected this one amongst others, to the ignorance of Indian slave trade. I often bring this out because occasionally you have our haters. You have some brothers and sisters who are misguided and need to get it together, or else they will not find that repentance.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize that so-called Northern Kingdom were in slavery. They try to say, well, Deuteronomy 28:68 doesn't apply to you, right? And it absolutely does. And over the course of the next few episodes, we'll be talking about the little-known Indian slave trade, right? Because it was even... little known to myself. I was very versed on Northern Kingdom stuff, being from the tribe of Ephraim, which are the so-called Puerto Ricans today. I remember I used to write papers, you know, I never glorified Columbus. And,
right.
You know, I was that one kid in school that was out there, like, people were, like, horrified, like, you know, the stuff that I was, you know, presenting. Mm. Like, so when you had to present something on Columbus Day or whatever.
So you were woke, you just weren't woke.
Yeah, I wasn't woke with the Bible. I just knew. And I kind of lived my life, like, I always knew, like, you know, like, damn, you know, these guys... They're not really our friends. They're not really. I always felt a vibe with the other nations that was uncomfortable.
Absolutely. That's the best way to put it. Yep.
And me personally, from my background, I worked in different fields that it was a lot of diversity. So, but especially when I got into the financial sector, lots of Edom, and. You know, I had to operate a certain way with that. So with that being said, I always felt, from clients to my coworkers, I always had a level of uncomfortableness with them. Like, I wasn't one of those, you know, Hispanics that was trying to present himself as not Hispanic. Although, I do admit, in my ignorance, I was never ashamed of saying I was Puerto Rican, but I always emphasized how my worldly last name, my slave name, was from Spain. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
Spaniard. Meanwhile, I got, like, no family in Spain, nothing right. like that, but I was, like, real heavy into that, like, oh, yeah, you know, this, that, and the other. But I always felt a certain leeriness about it, like, you know, and it wasn't until the truth. And that's why when the truth came to me, like, it all clicked and it made sense, you know, especially when I read Obadiah.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, my God, this is really how they are. This is them. And but I always had this thing. And even as far as, like, dating and stuff, I could never really have any type of serious relationships with any of them. No, I never had, like, you know, so-called white boys as my best friends, none of that stuff. I was friendly with everybody,
right.
But it was because I always felt something was off, you know, and I would be, like, uncomfortable in their circles and things like that, you know. So
most definitely.
Yeah.
You know, I had an experience when I, you know, in the Caribbean, we did a lot of history in high school. And, you know, the first history class I had when we were, you know, going over slavery, and tears came to my eyes.
Yeah.
In my mind, I was like, so these people are going to do all of this to us, and no payback.
Right.
That's what we were being taught right. back then. And that thing touched me pretty deeply. And, you know, for the longest while, I was like, this cannot be right.
Yeah.
And now I find out. It absolutely is not right.
No, there is a God that's gonna avenge us. So all praise to the Most High for that. Hey, and even now, man, sometimes I read about some of the atrocities, man, and it hits me for a second, man. You know, I've always been, I'm not going to say I'm an emotional brother, but I've always been able to be sensitive. Move your mic a little closer. They said they could barely hear you. I've always been a little, you know, like I get a little teary-eyed during certain movies and things like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, sure. You know.
And then those are things that they let us see.
Right.
So you got to think about the atrocities that we don't know about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be some real vile, vicious stuff for us to have the spirit to want to take their babies and dash them on rocks.
Yeah.
To do the things they did to us. Because people say it now. Like, listen, if you want to take someone's kid and dash them against a rock now, then your spirit ain't right. It's going to take God's anger that's manifested
right.
in you
right.
when you replay all those things done to us. So, man, I mean, the stuff that Esau lets us see lets you know that there's thousands of times worse stuff they did behind the scenes.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to realize that, I think we brought it out in the Lies My Teacher Told Me book on Wednesday show, most of our history, from whatever tribe you're from, was written by our oppressors.
Yep, absolutely.
We were not allowed to read and write, certainly not their languages, right? You know, the English language, because that's not really our first language. And we weren't able to document what really happened to us.
That's true.
So a lot of times when you read this stuff, and I read it, and I'm like, wow, like we may not get to it today, but in this book here, the enslavement of the American Indian in colonial times. I was reading this morning, and I'm highlighting some sections in there, and they always try to glaze over, right? So we're reading a point about kidnapping in there, because that's how the slavery largely started.
Right.
They didn't rush into a slave trade; they would kidnap, you know, a number of natives and you know, take them with them, and in some cases hold them for ransom, but they would do it subtly. So I was reading one account where they were like, you know, they took them on the ship. They showed them a bunch of, you know, metalwork and things, because that's one thing that apparently we didn't have a lot of out here was a lot of metalwork. And they were like, yeah, so look, you know, we want to trade with you. And so he notes, yeah, we fed them. So first he says they jumped in the ship and grabbed them and ambushed them because they went out to them on a ship.
Mm-hmm.
He jumps in, he ambushes them. And then it says, and they were like, you know, bugged out. But then, you know, we fed them, we sat down with them, we told them we want to trade with them. And then we said, let us take your two sons with us to France, and, you know, we'll bring them back to you. And in the meantime, you know, as a sign of goodwill. And then later it expounds in the book that was basically their way to hold them ransom. So nobody would mess with any of their claims that they would take to their land in fear that they wouldn't get the chief's two sons back that they took them with. So, you know, they fed them, you know, give the story of the heart. They sat down or whatever, but it was basically coerced that they were like, here, take the kids and do that, you know? You got a scripture you want to bring out? You thinking of something? Go ahead, bring it out if you got it. Go ahead. So it makes me think of that, and I'm like, gosh, man, these guys, when they write our history, they always try to glaze over it. They try to make it seem like, oh, our intent was to help, but then this happened, and our intent was that.
It reminds me of that history that you read about in Maccabees, when they took, was it John's two sons?
Yeah.
And then if they retaliated, then there was going to be repercussions. And if they didn't, then there'd be repercussions.
Yep.
So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. And then that same tactic that heathen used for the tribe of Gad, they still use those things today.
Yep, absolutely.
What
you bringing out, sir?
No, my thought is going to where it says the word of his mouth was smoother.
Oh, what was that? Psalms, is it 55?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. 55.
Yes.
Yes, sir. That is the one.
Yeah, hey, and let me tell you, we go to that a lot for a lot of different things, but that is appropriate for this too, because in the way they write our history, this applies to them.
Yes.
But if you're woke, you're able to read through it and see what's there. Go ahead, read that. That's a good point.
This is the book of Psalms, chapter 55 and verse 20. He hath put forth his hand against such as be at peace with him. He hath broken his covenant. The word of his mouth were smoother than butter, what war was in his heart.
Right, so when I'm going to take that to the extent of what we were just speaking about, right? We know a lot of different historical aspects. We brought that scripture out on Wednesday show to show some of the ways that, like when he did the toast with the chief,
yep.
said this is for eternal friendship. and they all drank the champagne, but the native champagne, the Israelite champagne, was poisoned.
Right.
And they all dropped dead.
Mm.
So smoother than butter. Hey, this is for a toast to eternal friendship. And then they all dropped dead.
Wow.
Because he poisoned them with that. But what, in the light that we were just speaking about, his words are smoother than butter. And he writes this history, this account of how he dealt with our people. And it's almost like, I'm going to bring it back home to this in a second. It reminds me of, again, that scene in The Matrix where Agent Smith is speaking to Morpheus. He has him in handcuffs. And he says, the first Matrix, we made it, you know, perfect for you or whatever, but you guys rejected it. Like, for some reason, you guys couldn't deal with paradise, so you rejected it. There's a lot heavy said within that. But it, the reason I thought of that as I'm speaking just now is because there's no way we would believe that it was this perfect friendly union.
Right.
So they didn't write it like that. So they put in just enough of their deception so that it's believable, but we still see them as, oh, well, they were ignorant to our ways, and
right.
it wasn't intentional that they did some of these things, and it wasn't us. It was another sect of conquistadors or pilgrims
right.
or British or whatever it was, whatever race they call themselves now, and not me, the one that's chronicling it. It was them, not us, and it creates a sense of believability, and it puts this ignorance in our mind that it wasn't as bad as maybe it was portrayed. So the point now that the school system, right, is calling it the Great Migration, and they're not talking about it slavery. And I guarantee you their aim is to, there's been bills that have been passed to try to phase it out altogether
right.
from being taught. But if you read between the lines, you can see the war in his heart. Like I'm gonna have to read it now, and then we'll jump to the article, because being that we spoke about it. You know what? I didn't send you the pictures of this, Ashai. I'm going to try to take pictures now. I'm sorry I'm messing you up.
No, you're good. Let me get Colossians 1, verse 25 real quick. Colossians 1, verse 25. Because, again, we have a lot of our people out there that are of the mindset that the Native Americans and Hispanics did not go into slavery when the Hispanics went into slavery 127 years before the blacks did, right? So it's up to us as able ministers of what God gives us to bring this truth out to our people. Colossians 1, verse 25.
This is the book of Colossians, chapter 1, verse 25. Whereof am I made a minister, according to the dispensation of God, which is given to me for you, to fulfill the word of God.
So the dispensation of God that was given to us is to fulfill what God gave us to our brothers and sisters, to teach them, listen, this is the way. Walk ye in it. You're not a Native American. You're not a Hispanic. You are an Israelite from your respective tribes. Read on.
Even the mystery which hath been hid from ages and from generations, but now is made manifest to his saints.
The mystery that's been hid from ages. At this time, it was the fact that the northern kingdom or the scattered Israelites were able to come back into the fold of God. That mystery is still plagues our people today, because there's been such a divide and conquer on our people that we can't believe that we are one body of people that have the same promises if we come back and do what God required of us. Read.
To whom God would make known what is the riches of the glory of this mystery among the Gentiles, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory.
So the Gentiles back then is the same people today, people that are without this understanding, but we are the ministers that are able to bring this glorious gospel to our people that are still in that darkness today. And it's these things, like his books, lies that my teacher told me, all the different other history books, to back what the Bible was saying as the only true book, that we are the chosen people of God.
Right. So I'm going to read from The Enslavement of the American Indian in Colonial Times. Or this is by Barbara J. Olexer. And this is a nonfiction account of how the colonists in what is now Eastern and Southern United States and Canada used enslavement as a weapon of war in an effort to destroy the Indian nations and obtain the land for their own use. The practice began before Columbus kidnapped Indians to take to Spain and continued until about the end of the Revolutionary War.
Jeez.
The English, Dutch, French, and Spanish colonists all employed enslavement of Indians as a policy. This was their policy. It was used as a method of warfare towards them. And it's interesting enough because it's even started happening prior to Columbus started doing it. But what's telling about this is that she mentions that Columbus also kidnapped Indians mm-hmm. and took them to Spain. So again, these trade routes of slavery on slave ships also happened to so-called Hispanics, so-called Native Americans. So I'm going to jump to the point in the book here on page 8. It's the one I just sent. Yeah. And I'm going to go to the highlighted section, right? So this is a note from Cartier. He was Jacques Cartier. He was one of the French conquerors, invaders. Yeah, I know. One of the French invaders. And this took place around 1534, right? So he met there. He traded with members of the Mi'kmaq Nation. And I'm going to jump down right to the point where they're reading from like some journals that were here. So he says, we caused a fair high cross to be made of the height of 30 foot. So they would leave crosses. They would leave the Christian cross as their marker of subtly stating, this is our land now.
And they do that same thing today.
Yes.
Like when we drove between here and Atlanta for Passover last year, and we drove through the so-called Bible Belt of America, bro, you see that. You see these massive crosses when you drive through Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, there's a lot behind that cross. And people, it's not just it's obviously the token sign of Christianity. But behind that also was their way. You know how like the United States will place a flag on the moon and say, I'm claiming this for America.
Right.
When they would put the cross down, they were saying, this is mine.
Right.
Claimed, right? That's how they would claim stuff. So he says, we caused a fair high cross to be made of the height of 30 foot.
Mm.
That's a big cross, 30 feet. Yes. And after we were returned to our ships, their captain, clad in an old bear skin, with three of his sons. So he's talking about one of the Indian chiefs of the Mi'kmaq Nation. Returned to our ships, their captain, clad in an old bear skin, with three of his sons and a brother of his with them, came unto us in one of their boats. Right. So we had ships, we had boats, right?
Yep.
You know, and notice he said boat. He didn't say a canoe, right? But they came not so near us as they were wont to do. So he said they were always suspicious. When you read up, for the sake of time, I'm not reading it. It says they were always suspicious. They were willing to do trade and stuff with them to a point, but they were always suspicious of them. So he said he came near the ship, right, but not so close. There he made a long oration unto us, showing us the cross we had set up and making a cross with two fingers. So he was speaking to them. Then did he show us all the country about us, as if he would say that all this was his. So even though there was a language barrier, how does he know that he's saying that he was saying all this was his?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the subtlety in their words, that he knew that that cross was laid there to claim that, hey, we're going home to get more people and supplies, and we're coming back, and this is ours. Don't try to settle here. So you got to visualize this thing. He's standing on the ship. He's talking to them in their ship. He's telling them, like, yo, you mother... You put this cross here. This is my land, whatever, right?
Right?
So he understood that. He says, and that we should not set up any cross without his leave. So he didn't understand their language. And he's saying, we should not set up any cross without his leave, meaning, hey, this is my land. Don't be dropping crosses here. This is not yours. His talk being ended, we showed him an axe, feigning that we would give it to him for his skin, to which he listened, right? So he says that they showed him an axe, right, to say, hey, we want to trade with you so we can get your bear skin. To which he listened, for by little and little he came near our ships. One of our fellows that was in our boat took hold on theirs and suddenly leapt into it with two or three more who enforced them to enter into our ship. So notice the nice words he used. They basically, as the ship, they notice he said I was feigning that we would give it to him for his skin. They lured him in. Under the premise of trading the axe for his bear skin, and then they ambushed this ship. And but our captain did straightways assure them that they should have no harm, nor any injury offered them at all, and entertained them very friendly, making them eat and drink. So you see how they put the word smoother than mother, butter, but you're reading before this how jacked up they went. They basically assaulted them on their ship and brought them onto their ship.
If that was their intention, then what's the point of having to enforce them onto their ship?
Exactly, exactly. Then did he show them with signs that the cross was but only set up to be as a light and leader, which ways to enter into the port. So they're letting you know that not only was it for a claim, it was to let others that know and come, hey, this is the spot. This is where we. This is where you're going to land, and we're going to do the destructive things that we do.
So that's like the landmarker right there.
That's the landmarker for them. and that he would shortly come again and bring good store of ironwares and other things, but that we would take two of his children with us. Like, what does that have to do with the other? They're like, hey, this is just a marker for when we return, and we're going to come to trade with you with more stuff, but we're going to take two of your children with us, and afterward, bring them to the said port again. And so we clothed two of them in shirts and colored coats with red caps and put about everyone's neck a copper chain, whereat they were greatly contented. First of all, so he's telling you that he enslaved them.
Yep.
You don't, copper's not something you wear. These demons were after gold and silver and things like that. So it wasn't like, see, somebody will read this in their simplicity and think like, oh, no, well, they dressed them in strange apparel, first of all, right?
Yep,
like curios to dress them up. Yeah, because that's what I wrote.
Yeah.
Oh, you understood that one. So he dressed them in strange apparel, and the copper chain, right? Our minds were thinking, oh, they put jewelry on them.
Yeah, right.
No. It would have been, maybe they would have said gold or silver chains, then you see different. He said he put copper and put about everyone's neck a copper chain, not a necklace,
right.
A chain. You see the subtlety in those words, that the way you read this, that if you're not learned, you're going to read this and be like, oh, but they gave them food and drink.
Right.
They wanted to take their kids there to culture them.
You read that and you think, here you go, fam. Here's some drip.
Right.
Like,
no.
Down, bro.
So when you're reading that Psalms 55 and it says their words were smoother than butter, but words, but war was in their hearts, he's letting you know. And then he says, whereat they were greatly contented. And that liar, they were content to be taken out of their clothes and put in yours.
That's what I was thinking. Weren't they wearing like bear skins?
Right. So, and they wanted to trade for bearskin.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
So you're going to put your dirty rags on us and we're supposed to be content. And then you put a copper chain and we were contented. Then gave their old clothes to their fellows that went back again. And we gave to each one of those three that went back a hatchet and some knives, which made them very glad. After these were gone and had told the news unto their fellows, in the afternoon there came to our ship 5 boats of them with 5 or 6 men in every one, to take their farewell of those two we had detained. Detained. Not invited. They were not our guests. Detained. Which is a nice word for captive.
That's right.
To take with us, and brought them some fish, uttering many words which we did not understand, making signs that they would not remove the cross we had set up. Well, they were probably telling them, like begging them, yo, don't take our son.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It appears that the Hurons had seen other crosses erected and understood that it meant the land was claimed by Europeans. Naturally, they would leave Cartier's crosses, knowing that it was their only hope of recovering Domagaya and Taigonagui, the sons of their chief. They held them for ransom.
There it is.
They held them for ransom. They held them for ransom. So they evil as hell with their attack. And that's how it started, with little subtle bouts of little small kidnapping, and then it became, and the reason they dress them that way, there's another book, I do not own it, I've seen it a few times and read it, it's by Ben Manessa, I forgot his name, but it deals with them coming, and it shows pictures, like depictions, drawings, of when they would take, when before it became a full-on slave trade, and they would take some of them back like this. And they were a novelty. They would parade them around their friends' houses and everything, dressed in their attire, in their European attire.
Right.
And it was humorous to them to see savages, right, or our people, and they would call them curios, right? So I remember curios nowadays, and growing up, my mom used to have this little cabinet with little figurines in there.
Okay.
And it was like little different things, like animals and, you know, people, little, and it was called a curio cabinet. Because it was a novelty that you would dote on and look at and be like, oh, look how, and this is how they were treating our Native American brothers and sisters, and as well as the Northern Kingdom, as they brought them back there to Europe to kind of parade them around and stuff like that. And we won't have time today, but we'll talk about it on Wednesday show when we talk about, that's how it started with Squanto.
Okay.
All right. They took him back and, you know, they educated him. And not out of the kindness of their heart, it was to try to have a mediator between them and the native tribes, much like they did with Nat Turner in the movie Birth of a Nation. When she found out he could read, she took him in And she said, yeah, I'm going to teach you how to read, but not these books. In the scenes here, she goes, that's not for you. Those things won't be useful for you. But I'm going to teach you the Bible. So it's funny, right? Because we were talking about it after movie night when we saw it. And we're like, that irony. Because, yes, there's some good information in that book. But she taught him how to read the most powerful book that was able to galvanize people.
Yeah,
right?
the whole thing with Squanto is...
So you see them here dressed up, right, in European attire, right?
Anything that they do is for the betterment and for the advancement of their own race of people.
That's
If our people get some little kind of gift that further destroys our heart along the way, then so be it. But they do nothing for the good of our people overall, though.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the enemy is pretty calculated, you know.
Yeah.
And as always, he's 10 steps ahead of us.
Hey, you got to remember, his blessing was war.
That's right.
Absolutely.
And yes, it primarily says with the sword, but that doesn't mean it was going to be all frontal assaults.
Right.
They do a diligent search, the Bible teaches us as well, and their warfare tactics are extreme.
Yep, absolutely.
They're psychological, they're famine, they know how to besiege. It's not just let me come in and dominate people.
Right.
Their tactics have to be like that because they understand that their kingdom is only for a supposition of time.
Yeah.
As much as they have that pomp that it can last forever, they know they have to have these diligent searches in order to keep us captive. So they have to search out things that's gonna last hundreds and thousands of years.
Hey, put that picture back up. That's a good one. That's a curio.
Yeah.
Look, they don't look happy there. He putting that, so it, letting you know, look, he's still trying to put his fur over it. And this is what they would do. And I don't know where they're saying the source of this picture is, but I can almost guarantee you this is not here. This is our brothers and sisters they took captive, took over there to Europe, right? France or wherever it was at the time. And they would set them up in photo studios. Right, because that's not outside. That's a photo backdrop and all that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something that they're taking with them on a ship. So this is them back in slavery, and they would dress them up like this as an oddity to put them in their garb and their pictures. You know, like when you get a dog and you put a T-shirt on them.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. You get a cat and you put a little hat on them. Oh, so cute.
Let's play some dress up.
Right. Let's play dress up. That's what they did. That's what they would do. All right. Let's jump to the article. And. This is an essay, actually, right? So this is, let me take it out. I have it on reading view. So this is the Gilder Lehrman Institute of American History, AP U.S. History Study Guide. So this is textbook type of stuff. I'm surprised that I found this, but I'm pretty sure it's probably in a specialized course that you have to take. It's not one that's like, you know, it's probably an elective that you have to take. So Indian Slavery in the Americas. The story of European colonialism in the Americas and its victimization of Africans and Indians follows a central paradigm in most textbooks. The African role encompasses the transportation, exploitation, and suffering of many millions in New World slavery, while Indians are described in terms of their succumbing in large numbers to disease, with the survivors facing dispossession of their land. This paradigm, a basic one in the history of colonialism, omits a crucial aspect of the story. The indigenous people of the Americas were enslaved in large numbers. And this is what I often speak about, what I spoke about at the beginning of the show. When we're on the show, we go over this a lot. There is this misconception. The so-called Northern Kingdom tribes, the Hispanics, the Native Americans, were not enslaved. That we don't fit the curses, we were not enslaved. This could not be further from the truth. This is you succumbing to the subtle, crafty counsel, the wicked devices of our oppressors, and falling into that paradigm to keep the house divided, to keep the Israelites separated. And it says that it's a paradigm, and a paradigm is something so powerful. That's why you might hear terms of like a paradigm shift. It's such a revelation. So, right, so for example, before any of us repented, it took a paradigm shift.
Yeah, right.
Our total views on life and everything that was taught to us were changed.
Right.
So it has to be something that powerful to take you out of the false understanding that you have. So the paradigm is that so-called Africans, meaning Southern Kingdom largely, were the ones that went in slavery on ships and everything.
Yep.
And that when it comes to our people, we were destroyed by disease and our land taken. But
first
of all, there are plenty of curses that cover that. And we brought that out on Wednesday. But then secondly, yes, Deuteronomy 28:68, because that's their gripe. doesn't apply to us. It most definitely does.
It does. You know, it's funny, Captain. You know, just before I came into the truth, I was working at a particular facility, and there was a Hispanic young lady there, and I, you know, speaking to her just to find out, you know, how much, you know, she knows about her own history. And this is a Mexican. So I said to her, hey, did you know that your people actually went into slavery? Because, you know, this is something I've learned before.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, no.
And that's just it. It's not even just those against us.
Right.
Like, as far as the people who preach that the Northern Kingdom's not who the Bible says they are. It's the actual Northern Kingdom themselves that oftentimes
absolutely
do not realize that they were enslaved as well.
Hey, case in point, I was getting my my hair cut once, and then the young lady that was cutting my hair was from Mexico, and she was bragging to me that the part of Mexico that she's from is where Hernan Cortez built his palace. And I said to her, you know, you realize that Hernan Cortez is the one that slaughtered your people and put you guys in slavery. Like, you realize that, right? No. No.
Wow.
And I'm like, and she was showing me pictures of her in front of his palace. It's like a museum, I guess, now. This big cathedral, and she's like posing and happy. And I'm like, wow, how ignorant that you not know that.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, that was in 1520. She's like, yeah. I'm like, how do you not know that? That's your history.
There was some, I can't remember where I have it, because I got all these books floating around now. Deacon Nathan sent me a bunch, and I was able to find some of them. But there's something about Hernan Cortez that we're going to go into also at some point. So, you know,
that
was where we debunked that. So it says this paradigm is a basic one in the history of colonialism. And the fact that it's a basic one in the history means that it's set up to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
The indigenous peoples of the Americas were enslaved in large numbers. This exclusion distorts not only what happened to American Indians under colonialism, but also points to the need for a reassessment of the foundation and nature of European overseas expansion, meaning letting their true motivations be known and taught in history. Without slavery, slave trading, and other forms of unfree labor, right? And what the author is trying to express here when they put other forms of unfree labor is all the other terms they use, like indentured servitude or whatever it is. European colonization would have remained extremely limited in the New World. So without slavery, and this is something, right, that's an understood fact, but oftentimes, again, we just think the so-called African slave trade, right? So it says the Spanish were almost totally dependent on Indian labor in most of their colonies. So, yes, when we speak about the term Indian, which we understand is derogatory to many, that's the colloquial term, meaning the common term that people will understand.
Right.
Indian also means those that were in the Caribbean, those that were in Central South America when they arrived here, right? That's the term they used for all of us, right? You had the Caribs, which is where your tribes descend from. You had the Arawaks, which is where Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, Cubans descended from. And there was one more that was more or less known, but it was mainly the Caribs and the Arawaks at that time. And they also had trade routes into Central South America, so there was a lot going on there amongst the tribes.
There was the Tainos?
Taino was a term that came later, and that was ascribed to us by the conquistadors that came.
Okay.
So that wasn't what we called ourselves.
Right.
It eventually, in the process of time, became what we called ourselves because they took away the Arawak Carib history.
Okay.
So it's the same way we were called Tainos. I don't know if you guys are known as anything other than Jamaicans after that. So so before we were called Puerto Ricans and Dominicans and Cubans, they called us all Taino. So Taino, actually, I think Captain Aparim has a book that says that that was just a way for us to say good people.
Okay.
And it was misconstrued, and they called us Taino because apparently when they came on the ships, we were saying Taino, but as a question, are you good people or are you here to harm us? So they called us Taino.
You guess that question was answered, huh?
Yeah. But Arawaks is what you'll find some history on.
Right.
And like I said, Caribs. So since the Spanish were totally dependent on Indian labor in most of their colonies, and even where unfree labor did not predominate, as in the New England colonies, colonial production was geared towards supporting the slave plantation complex of the West Indies. So even at the point that the pilgrims were here, everything they did was supporting the slavery of what was left of the Caribbean Israelites to be brought to the mainland to work the plantations. So it says, thus we must take a closer look at the scope of unfree labor, the central means by which Europeans generated the wealth that fostered the growth of colony. Modern perceptions of early modern slavery associate the institution almost solely with Africans and their descendants. Yet slavery was a ubiquitous institution in the early modern world, meaning it was everywhere. Ubiquitous means it's present everywhere. Africans, Asians, Europeans, and Native Americans kept slaves. Notice it says Asians, right, as well. And notice the distinction when they say Africans. They know that there's a difference between the seed of Ham and the seed of Shem.
Yep.
So they know that there's a difference. So it wasn't Israel selling Israel, right? So it says Africans, Asians, Europeans, and Native Americans kept slaves before and after Columbus reached America. And they always try to throw that twist in there with the natives and say that we had each other in some form of captivity. Now, I will say this. There are laws in the Bible about servants, right? But servants of your own people are treated different.
Right. Plus,
it's not this cruel slavery or whatever that they try to portray.
Esau was mad as hell at our brothers Reuben, especially when Esau was telling them, listen, these right here, these lot of men or men, women, whatever, these slaves, keep them as slaves. And they'd come back, and then Reuben would have them set up as like princes and kings among them. And they're like, what the hell are you guys doing? This is not what we told you guys to do. Because they understood that was our people.
Yes, yes. Yahweh Shabbat just wrote, they called the tribe of Simeon Kiskeyano Indian. Yeah, because Kiskeya was the name of the island before it was, actually, before it became Dominican Republic, it was Hispaniola. It's what they called it. Dominican Republic is what they called it also. And what the Arawaks called it was Kiskeya.
Okay.
So I guess, and so they made that term up, Kiskeyano Indian, when they said probably the same thing. There was a dialogue, Kiskeya. Like they're probably trying to tell them, no, this is Kiskeya. And they call them Kiskeyano Indian. So it says, modern perceptions of early modern, yet slavery was as ubiquitous institution in the early modern world. Africans, Asians, Europeans, and Native Americans kept slaves before and after Columbus reached America. So notice, it says before and after, before and after, they kept slaves. Enslavement meant a denial of freedom for the enslaved, but slavery varied greatly from place to place, as did the lives of the slaves. The life of a Genizaro, slave soldier of the Ottoman Empire, who enjoyed numerous privileges and benefits, immensely different from an American Indian who worked in the silver mines of Peru. So notice, he says American Indians also worked in the silver mines of Peru.
Right.
So brothers and sisters, I this was a thing for me to grasp spiritually when I first came in, because we see so little of Gad and Reuben, right?
Yes.
And it's because we're thinking in a prototypical manner of the stereotypical Indian with a headdress and the long hair and certain types of features. The Most High knows how to preserve his seed. And there was so-called Gadites and Reubenites that went to Peru, that went to, meaning that there's some of us who are claiming Asher and Zebulon and even Ephraim or whatever, and we might be Gad too. We might be Gad, we might be Reuben, because they brought us in slave trade all over the place. All over the place.
You know, I just want to, it's funny, my mother, you know, looking back, and I'm thinking about my mom, you know, sometimes, because she died a few years ago. And I'm looking at her, and I'm not really seeing, you know, the African features that we have.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm seeing is more of a Native American look
yeah.
at my mom. And
yeah.
I'm like, you know, they say they're Indians.
Yeah, like they call them more refined features, right?
Right,
versus the blunter features.
Yeah, right,
that's
right,
the term
right.
they use
right.
for it. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they told me that her dad was an Indian.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm observing my mom and how, you know, she went after seeking the Most High in the wrong way, you know, then I'm like, if her dad is actually an Indian, because, you know, in Jamaica, we have a lot of East Indians that came
yes,
in
yes.
the,
mm-hmm.
So,
Diana
now I'm,
too.
Because I didn't know her dad. Mm-hmm. So now I'm thinking to myself, he might be a Native American,
mm-hmm.
you know, that. Either from the Arawak or the Caribs,
yes,
right?
Yep.
Yes.
Whichever one it is.
Absolutely. So, you know, so the seed is still preserved, right?
Right.
And we use Genesis 49, Deuteronomy 33 to get a generalization, but there's some of us that might not be that, and that's the Most High preserving that seed. My point is, don't think you're going to see, like, a John Wayne movie, Indians, 12,000 that look like that, and 12,000 that, you know what I'm saying? Yes, like the Most High knows how to preserve that mustard seed.
And
you
also
know?
To that point, too, for people that want to discredit the 12 tribes chart, that means that you don't believe in the power of God, then. You don't believe that there's a God in Israel that could preserve that seed and for us to have
little faith.
Our, exactly. O ye of little faith.
O ye of little faith.
You do not believe the power of God that he could preserve all 12 tribes and that we would come back into remembrance here in these last days.
Right, right. So back to what we're reading here. So, you know, they throw this in there to kind of let you know, okay, so some slaves were treated better than others. But slavery is still slavery.
Right, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? So you earn certain privileges. So you know what I'm saying? So you have status. There's a hierarchy within the slavery. It's still slavery. You're still held against your will, right? You're still separated from family and friends. You still cannot have the freedom to live a normal life, worship the one true God the way you want to. You can't do none of that stuff the way you're required to.
Yeah,
so
right.
He says, so it immensely differed from an American Indian who worked in the silver mines of Peru or an African who produced sugarcane in Barbados, letting you know that remnants of Judah were down there as well. People could be kept as slaves for religious purposes. And that's another point, too, because you'll have some people be like, well, if the conquistadors and all these nations did such a number on so-called Northern Kingdom, then they must not be. The Lord knows how to replenish that thing. Right. And that's when we've gone over this on the show where we show the different mixes and how you can and how even with all that dilution, you can wind up returning back to what you were.
Yeah, right.
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 And that's how you see that the genetic pool gets me. So, right. So basically, if a Israelite sister that was all mixed up and whatever and has all types of Edom in her, right, to the point that it gets diluted, that she's not Edom anymore. During the slave trade, the Most High was having Judah, Benjamin, Levi,
right.
Ephraim, and all the tribes, because not all of them came over in 2nd Ezra. Some stayed back.
That's right.
All the tribes came over and wound up going into there. So you have to stop thinking of your stereotypical appearance of something. And I've often said this about Northern Kingdom, too. You have the modern stereotype of Northern Kingdom in your head. From Gad and Reuben to the
Mira.
Light-skinned, Rico Suave-looking Puerto Ricans and Dominicans. You have to remember that may be the modern iteration of us, but many of us did not look like that at one time, nor are all of us going to be the typical that you see today.
Right.
That's the cake unturned that you see there. You were going to say something. Did I cut you? Okay.
No.
Was it you?
Yeah.
Oh.
So people say, if that's the case, right, them slaughtering millions upon millions. But there's a reason why the blessings that the Lord gave in Deuteronomy and Genesis was things like Ephraim would be a fruitful bowl, right? Asher, let Asher be blessed with children.
Yeah. Hey, the Most High, when he left the prophecy via the prophets to know who those tribes were in the last days, he never used features,
ever.
Skin color, or characteristics.
Never.
That's true.
He told you to identify them by the afflictions and the blessings that they and the geography of where they'd be.
It never says and blesses Asher for the blackness of his skin.
Right.
Never.
Right.
It said let him be blessed with children because listen, they will be slaughtered upon the millions.
Brothers and sisters need to step their knowledge up because they get a little taste and I get it. Bible knowledge is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You wet your beak just a little bit. And you think you know all things and you got everything down on lock.
You know, there are two things the scripture says. Israel is the sand of the sea,
right? Mm-hmm.
Now, in order to be the sand of the sea, you got to be more in number than anybody else.
Right.
So
right.
There's absolutely no way that, you know, all the tribes are gone or any of the tribes are gone anywhere. And then the other thing with the curses is going to cleave onto us and follow us wherever we are.
Right. It said they will pursue you, right,
and overtake you.
Yes. Yep. And to be overtaken, there's often a part of that that people don't think about, means that it would identify you.
Absolutely.
It would come to be like your scarlet letter, like your badge of honor, right? Like that would be the sign, like that would be the thing. So for something to overtake you means that it would become our identity.
Absolutely.
That is the difference between any other nation that might have had slaves and went into slavery. When it says overtake you, It means that that would become, why? Because it overtook our real heritage to the point that we forgot who we are, that we have confusion of faces, right? I say this often. Every single word, every single letter in the Bible is extremely deliberate by the Most High God. It amazes me the power, because, you know, we talk with filler. We have ums and this to even not having an economy of words. The Most High is a master of the economy of words. Economy of words meaning it's sufficient enough to get the point and nothing more. No distractors, nothing else. And when it comes to the Bible, every word is extremely deliberate in that sense. You don't have filler.
You know, like this morning I was, you know, on my journey here, and I'm thinking about the Bible. I'm like, people look at the book, and, you know, some people say, oh, this part is old. But no, the book is history. The book is present, because you can go inside the book right now and see things are occurring as we speak. And then there's a future.
Yep.
So this book is
past, present, future. 100%
alive.
Past, present, future.
Absolutely.
Sometimes when you're reading certain chapters, you get past, present, future right in those verses.
Yes, sir.
Right within the same verses sometimes. It's talking about something to be, something that was, or something that is now.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and it's only the Most High that's going to be able to help you deal with that the longer and more consistent you are keeping those commandments. So it says people could be kept as slaves for religious purposes, Aztecs and Pacific Northwest Indians, or as a byproduct of warfare where they made little contribution to the economy or basic social structure, the Eastern Woodlands. In other societies, slaves were central to the economy. In many areas of West Africa, for instance, slaves were the predominant form of property and the main producers of wealth. As it expanded under European colonialism to the New World in the late 15th through 19th centuries, so notice, the European colonialism only helped expand it. It was already established, actually, and again, what next on Wednesday's show, we'll bring it out more. It talks about in this book, it actually started with the so-called Vikings.
That's right.
And I'm talking about modern world, because obviously we know Asians were in there as well. So I'm not talking about the advent of it, but so really it was the Vikings. Then it was the Spaniards and Dutch, right? The Portuguese, and then it expanded into like the French, and then what you know as the European colonialism. So slavery was expanded under European colonialism to the New World in the late 15th through 19th centuries. Slavery took on a new racialized form involving the movement of millions of peoples from one continent to another based on skin color, and the creation of a vast slave plantation complex that was an important cog in the modernization and globalization of the world economy. The world that we have today was a result of the slavery of the Israelites. So when we say and we bring things out, when we're doing things on news articles and things like that, and we say, oh, the agenda is all driven by the subjugation of the Israelites, you best believe it, because that's how they attain their wealth. That's how the world goes round nowadays, and they want to maintain that status quo. Africans provided the bulk of labor in this new system of slavery, but American Indians were compelled to labor in large numbers as well. In the wake of the deaths of indigenous Americans from European conveyed microbes, which we spoke about Wednesday, from which they had no immunity, the Spanish colonists turned to importing Africans. Now, I have often said that on this show, but this is the first time I'm presenting some evidence of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reason it became so enlarged, outside of the Most High's will and how he was doing it, during what was known as the African slave trade, was because they did decimate so many of us in the Holocaust that they did to the natives here.
Right.
But within that, right, they still had us as slaves, and then they realized that they needed more to keep the cog turning after their bloodlust was fulfilled, right? And just give us time on this show. If it be the Lord's will life last, we're going to go over more of that stuff and go detailed into the atrocities that they committed to us. We were so decimated, right? And they say microbes. We broke this down on Wednesday. It was not just the microbes, okay? That was a large part of it, because the fulfilling of the curses of the diseases that would come upon us in Deuteronomy 28. But it says, in the wake of the death of those, the Spanish colonists had to turn to importing Africans to bulk that up.
Right.
And that was by the Most High's design to replenish the tribes. Because within there was from every tribe. Even though they were coming out of Africa, there was Northern Kingdom tribes. There was, again, don't go with the, and I say Mira Mira because I know that's how Southern Kingdom talks about the typical.
Facts.
No, the Mira Mira.
We do.
This is a racist and gross misinterpretation of this event, posited that most Indians could not be enslaved because of their love for freedom. Right? So he says that's a racist and gross misrepresentation. While Africans were used to having their labor controlled by big men in Africa. So that's horrible because they're saying basically Southern Kingdom was docile and used to being enslaved.
Right.
So they were easier to be enslaved and the natives were not. They're saying it's a gross misrepresentation because while that was true to some extent, the Bible tells us how Gad shall overcome at the end, right? Gad did fight back to an extent because we here on this side of the world, if we were enslaved here, we had a lay of the land. We were more inclined to be rebel and escape because we could survive the wilderness out here. We were familiar with it, right? That was our lifestyle. But overall, overreaching, that's not true. We were in slavery as well. This dangerous view obscured a basic fact of early modern history. Anyone could be enslaved. Over 1 million Europeans were held as slaves from the 1530s to the 1780s in Africa. And mind you, they say Europeans, but remember how Paul says he was a Roman, but he says he was an Israelite?
Absolutely.
Many of our people were these that they enslaved in Africa. We were just European citizens. And hundreds of thousands were kept as slaves by the Ottomans in Eastern Europe and Asia. John Smith, for instance, had been a slave of the Ottomans before he obtained freedom and helped colonize Virginia. In 1650, more English were enslaved in Africa than Africans enslaved in English colonies, even as late as the early 90s. So you see how they try to throw distractors in there, right? United States citizens were enslaved in North Africa. As the post-slavery ideologue George Fitzhugh noted in his book, Cannibals All, 1857, in the history of world slavery, Europeans were commonly the ones held as slaves. And that's a misnomer because that's they're trying to, we're not saying that they were not, but remember what we said, the curse of Satan would overtake us.
Right.
That has not become their identity. And for the Bible, that's our identity. The Bible tells you that's how you remember yourself. It says, not until the 18th century did the word slave and African become nearly synonymous in the minds of Europeans and Euro-Americans. Okay, what are you going to say?
So how they use those ambiguous terms like Europeans.
Yes.
And Africans, black.
Yep.
You know, to disguise the fact that the enslaved people were actually one nation predominantly.
Yep.
And not the whole world as
right.
the narrative they try to portray.
Right. So it says, with labor at a premium in the colonial American economy, there was no shortage of people seeking to purchase slaves. Both before and during African enslavement in the Americas, American Indians were forced to labor as slaves and in various other forms of unfree servitude. They worked in mines, on plantations, as apprentices for artisans, and as domestics, just like African slaves and European indentured servants. As with Africans shipped to America, Indians were transported from their natal communities to labor elsewhere as slaves. So let's read Deuteronomy 28:68 with this understanding now. And that does apply to so-called Northern Kingdom.
This is the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 28, verse 68. And the Lord shall bring thee into Egypt again with ships. By the way whereof I spake unto thee.
Egypt meaning captivity. We will go into captivity again with ships. Come on.
Thou shalt see it no more again. And there ye shall be sold unto your enemies for bondmen and bondwomen. And no man shall buy you.
Meaning no man would save us from that, right? No man would save us from that slavery. So it says here, again, I'll read, as with African shipped to America, Indians were transported from their natal communities to labor elsewhere as slaves, to elsewhere in the region and to Europe and other parts, right? So even in Africa, because they were setting up colonies in Africa and they had slaves there. Many Indians from Central America were shipped to the West Indies. So there's a lot of Zebulon and Issachar. So that means some people that's repping Benji might not even be Benji.
That's right. That's the realization I came to with my mom.
You're right. Right. That's what you were saying. Many Indians from Central America were shipped to the West Indies. Also, a common destination for Indians transported out of Charleston, South Carolina, and Boston, Massachusetts, two of the largest slave ports. Many other Indians were moved hundreds or thousands of miles within the Americas. Sioux Indians from the Minnesota region could be found enslaved in Quebec, and Choctaws from Mississippi in New England. A long-standing line of transportation of Indian slaves led from modern-day Utah and Colorado south into Mexico. The European trade in American Indians was initiated by Columbus in 1493. Needing money to pay for his New World expeditions, he shipped Indians to Spain, where they already existed slave markets dealing in the buying and selling of Africans. Within a few decades, the Spanish expanded the slave trade in American Indians from the islands of Hispaniola, which is now the Dominican Republic, to Puerto Rico, Jamaica, Cuba, and the Bahamas.
Captain, I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
It said right there, selling of Africans in 1493. Mm-hmm. Did they say earlier about Europeans?
Right. They were saying that Europeans.
Right.
So it's letting you know. Well, so they like told on themselves in the story who those Europeans were. Right. Right.
They said, but no one shall see it.
Right.
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 Real subtle.
The great decline in the indigenous island populations, which largely owed to disease, slaving, and warfare, led the Spanish to then raid Indian communities in Central America and many of the islands just off the continent, such as Curacao, Trinidad, and Aruba. About 650,000 Indians in coastal Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and Honduras were enslaved in the 16th century.
Mm.
Conquistadors then entered the inland American continent and continued the process. Hernando de Soto, for instance, brought with him iron implements to enslave the people of La Florida on his infamous expedition through the American Southeast into the Carolinas and west to the Mississippi Valley, Rubin, all the Seminoles that were down there. And when it says that he brought iron implements, it's talk. Remember how we read the copper chain that they put on him?
Yes,
he brought slavery apparatus. So when it says the other curses that talk about grass up on your head, the yoke of iron, right, and all that stuff, it applies to the so-called northern tribes as well. Indians were used by the conquistadors as tamemes to carry their goods on these distant forays. Another form of Spanish enslavement of Indians in the Americas was yanaconaje, which was similar to European serfdom, whereby Indians were tied to specific lands to labor rather than lords. And under the encomienda system, which we've gone over, the Indians were forced to labor or pay tribute to an encomendero, who in exchange was supposed to provide protection and conversion to Christianity. Get me Lamentations 5, because this is talking about where he says, we've sold our water, we've given the hand. Hold on. Let's see what's...
Start at verse 1.
You can start at verse 1.
This is the book of Lamentations, chapter 5, and verse 1. Remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Consider and behold our reproach.
Right, so it's part of this remembrance is that your eyes shall see your teachers, and they got to bring this to our people's remembrance.
That's
like
right.
You were bringing out earlier,
right.
Even some Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, all that stuff, even some of us didn't know that we were in slavery, right?
Absolutely.
So it says we must remember and consider and behold our reproach, because we remember where the curses, we went into captivity because of these things. Come on.
Our inheritance is turned to strangers. Our houses to aliens.
Right. The book, when we were reading, it says that they were wary of the strangers. Our inheritance was just based on Genesis 49, Deuteronomy 33, the portions of the lands that we got over here. Right. And not just that, but also our identity. Right. So it says it was turned to strangers, our houses to aliens. They were the illegal aliens. Come on.
We are orphans and fatherless. Our mothers are as widows.
Right, and this encompasses a lot of things, how they took the young men, how they killed and didn't honor the hoary head. Go ahead, read on. We're going to go down to 6.
We have drunken our water for money. Our wood is sold unto us.
So this is what he's talking about when they had to pay tribute for protection.
Right.
That was you know how, like, we spoke about this before, how the mafia, mm-hmm. they'll go in and they say, hey, you got to pay protection money,
yeah.
right? But the protection money is not from other people, but you're really paying it. You're paying us so we don't rob them.
Right.
So they basically had to sell they drunk their water for money and their wood is sold onto us. So all the land they had to work and give to them, and then it was sold back to them. Come on.
Our necks are under persecution. We labor and have no rest.
Why? Because he bought iron implements. So we were in chains. We labor and have no rest because they worked us from sun up to sundown, right? Keeping us just alive enough to continue to be useful to them. Come on.
We have given the hand to the Egyptians and to the Assyrians to be satisfied with bread.
That's the point. That's the verse that I wanted. So in the encomienda system, Indians were forced to labor or pay tribute to an encomendero who in exchange was supposed to provide protection and conversion to Christianity. The encomendero's power survived longest in frontier areas, particularly in Venezuela, in Chile, Paraguay, and in the Mexican Yucatan in the 19th century. There's still so much more. We're going to have to wrap it up. Just remember, by 1542 is where we were. We'll pick that up on the Wednesday show as we continue to go into the Indian slavery. So we'll use this article again. Too much. It's gonna heat up too much, and then we're already a little bit over for the show. So, any comments?
No, I'm just looking forward to a Wednesday. Ooh, hey, listen,
it's gonna be hot fire. Wednesday's gonna be hot fire.
This stuff is necessary, man. It's excellent material for us to come and bring to the people to show. Listen, we are the same people. All right, you don't believe in God if you really think that there's this whole thing of just Afro Black and everything else. It's just ridiculous.
Right. All right. It's high time we get past that stuff, man. We gotta bring it out. All right. So, continue to support us, like and share. And if you like what you were hearing today, tune into the Wednesday show. We get 2 hours to go deeper into this. All right. Los Will Captain Apart will be there. All right. So, you'll have the three of us on here and, I'm not sure who will have as our reader, but you'll get a lot of good insight as we continue to dive into this history, make the Bible come to life, and let y'all see that all the 12 tribes need to know who they are and come to their repentance, all right? So with that, we say shalom.
Shalom.
Shalom. Shalom. Thank you for having me. That was quite an experience.
Good. I'm glad you spoke up, too. A lot of people don't be speaking up.
Did my facial red?
You were blushing a little bit, though. You were blushing for sure. I saw that.
Oh, my thighs.
I'll be drinking some more water. Oh, that's pretty cool, though. Time went by real quickly.
Oh, it does.
It sure does. Even the 2 hour, bro. We didn't get to talk about it, but I was like, damn.